The National Catholic Register is the essential and reliable source of news and views for Catholics. Subscribe today. Go to EWTN.com and click on the link for The Register or call 800-421-3230.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Tim Drake talks with National Catholic Register Senior Editor Joan Frawley Desmond about the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops annual fall meeting, which took place this week. Joan was there. She'll give us the highlights. Also in the second half of our program, Tim interviews Belmont Abbey College President Dr. William Thierfelder about the college's decision to sue the federal government. Wow. Welcome to Register Radio, a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello, Tim.
Hey, great to be with you, Tom.
Tim, it is always news here in America when the United States bishops meet twice a year to discuss various topics, and we're blessed to be able to call on Joan to give us a wrap-up today.
That's right, Tom. And as we just heard, this week, the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops gathered for their annual fall meeting in Baltimore, and the National Catholic Register's senior editor and award-winning journalist, Joan Frawley Desmond, was there earlier in the week to cover the part of the meeting that is open to journalists. Joan is joining us on Register Radio to talk about some of the highlights from the meeting. Thanks for being with us, Joan.
Hi. Thank you, Tim and Tom.
So, Joan, you were able to speak with several bishops and sit in on part of the meeting that's open to the press. How many bishops' conferences have you covered over the years?
Oh, that's a tricky question, but I would say I've covered at least five or six. Back to the 1980s and up to the last couple of years, I've covered the conferences. It's an interesting point, Tim, because media characterizations of the conference are trying to hearken back to those conferences of the 1980s and saying that in those days the bishops focused on economic issues, and now they seem to be, in the view of some media, turning, quote, inward to focus on religious freedom issues. Key theme at the bishops' conference this year is that, contrary to the view that religious freedom is an internal issue for the church, it's actually a very important, vital issue for every American. Religious freedom is a concern that should not be limited to the Catholic Church alone, but affects all individual Americans.
Were there any surprises?
There were really two important issues. One was religious freedom, and the other one was the announcement of the ordinariate for Anglican youth, which will start in the new year. The religious freedom issue was interesting for me because I've been covering it from primarily the Washington angle. The bishops, as you know, have been challenging recent actions taken by the Obama administration dealing with judicial decisions now before the Supreme Court, the so-called religious exemption issue that's come up, ministerial exemption in the Hosanna Tabor case, as well as the HHS mandate on contraception, which could affect most Catholic institutions. The bishops have focused on that. That approach has been unified. But at the conference, I also realized that there are state issues and that individual bishops also have their own take on how to navigate this. So I think what we're going to see in the year ahead as this issue heats up is both the national focus led by the USCCB on issues where they need to negotiate with the federal government, such as HHS, but also in state issues dealing with same-sex marriage laws, hate crime statute laws that might incorporate same-sex couples, and life issues where the church may be asked to incorporate contraception or other services. We're going to see a variety of different approaches taken by bishops depending on the actual law and their own judgment.
That's interesting that you raise that. I was curious at the meeting if there appeared to be any very evident divides on the part of the bishops over any of the issues that they were facing.
Well, I think two issues I noticed there, and I think none of this is acrimonious, by the way, and some of it is a question of strategy. It's not a question of theology. So keep that in mind. Just like the pro-life movement in the past has had strategy debates over, you know, should we have a constitutional amendment banning abortion or shouldn't we, and, you know, those kinds of issues. The same is going to be true, I think, on ways to approach same-sex marriage. But what I hear are two issues that I noticed. In Massachusetts, when the fight first got revved up to try to stop the effort to legalize same-sex marriage, opponents of same-sex marriage said, you know, we're not going to have a religious exemption. We're not going to have anything that could, you know, shield those politicians ultimately voting for legal same-sex marriage by saying, oh, it's not a problem. We have a religious exemption, so we can just go ahead and do that. The opponents of same-sex marriage did not provide a religious exemption in the same-sex marriage law in Massachusetts, and right now there is no religious exemption. Now, other states have opted for different solutions, and of course, you know, in the case of Massachusetts, that was a strategy taken to try to maintain unified opposition to the law, the new law that was being proposed. Well, the law passed. So now we have new situations moving forward. And in Maryland, for example, there's going to be a big move again to try to legalize same-sex marriage in early 2012. And I asked Cardinal Wuerl of Washington, D.C., which also incorporates Maryland, what he thought should happen in Maryland with the law. And he said he was going to strongly propose that a religious exemption be included in any proposed legislation from the get-go. He said he didn't want to be in a position where there was no religious exemption if the law passed. That was not going to change his efforts to fight this proposed legislation, but he wanted it in place.
That's a good reminder, I think, that our bishops serve particular territories and that they oversee those and how they feel that, you know, church law should work in those areas may differ between bishops. I want to remind listeners that we are talking with National Catholic Register senior editor Joan Frawley Desmond. She covered the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops meeting this week. Joan, I wanted to ask, the other thing that you said that was big news out of the conference was the announcement of the about the Anglican Use Ordinance. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what the news was?
Yes, the news is that that after a two-year process, which I understand there were some who were hoping to join this ordinariate, they were hoping that it would happen sooner, and they were kind of chomping at the bit. The Cardinal Wuerl, who has led this effort and who has already brought in two communities of Episcopalian seeking to join an Anglican Use effort. He announced at the conference, this was probably one of the biggest news issues of the conference, which was mostly more internal issues involving issues of the church, internal management issues. But Cardinal Wuerl said the ordinary for this new ordinariate would begin, would be announced on January 2012, so it's going to be a great New Year's present for those Episcopalians seeking to become part of this Anglican Use Ordinariate. And what it would do it would mean that they would be able to bring with them, as they moved into the Catholic Church, some of the liturgies and other practices that they love and want to retain, if possible. As you know, those who joined the Catholic Church in the past, they just participate in the regular services like the rest of us and do not have the option of having Anglican Use liturgy. So that means some of their hymns, some of the liturgy will be in place, and, you know, after the celebration of the liturgy, they'll probably be doing other cultural activities, just as any other group would, that reinforce their own heritage as part of the larger Catholic Church. So I think it's a time of great celebration for many. And I spoke with Cardinal Wuerl just before he had to go to the podium to make this very important announcement, and a lot of people were not sure of what he was going to actually announce. So I had been hearing rumors, unsubstantiated rumors, of people saying, has there been some resistance? You know, are we really moving forward with this ordinariate? So I asked Cardinal Wuerl that, and we had had a very, you know, enjoyable conversation. But when I asked him that, he was a little taken aback, and I think he was surprised that people would have questioned whether things were moving forward. And he quickly said to me, You'll see in a few minutes exactly what is going to happen. So, you know, 10 minutes later, he's up on the podium and announces that the new ordinary of the ordinary would be announced the very first day of the new year, and that the first group of priests who will enter through this new Anglican use ordinariate will enter in, I'm not sure the exact date, I think it's January 24th or 25th of 2012. So everyone's very excited about that. And those new members, what they had to do was they had to, first get original, sort of first stage of approval. There's a two-stage process. The second stage involves all those sad realities that we need to do nowadays, which includes criminal background checks, as well as psychological evaluations, and then a final review approval by the bishop in the diocese where they reside.
That's great news, Joan. I want to remind listeners again, we are speaking with Joan Frawley-Desmond, who is senior editor with the National Catholic Register. I am Tim Drake, and you're listening to Register Radio. We're talking about the bishop's annual fall meeting that took place this week. Joan, were any numbers expressed as part of that as to how many individual Episcopalian priests are asking to come in, or how many communities want to come in as a whole? Did you hear any numbers expressed at all?
I heard different amounts. I heard 2,000 or 3,000 individuals, and as I said, about 60 plus overall, but so far about 35 have been actually approved in terms of priests. I'd also like to add, Tim, that in the discussion that ensued after Cardinal Wuerl made this very important announcement, it's clear that a lot of bishops are somewhat confused about how this is going to work. How will approval happen? Some, of course, already have priests or individuals who were Episcopalian who have come into the Catholic Church. They have to get approval to shift over. Well, the priests in particular have to get approval to shift over to the Anglican Use Ordinariate. So, let's say you have a bishop who's already, you know, employing that priest very effectively in his diocese. That priest will have to get approval from the bishop to move to this Anglican Use Ordinariate. And he may, you know, perhaps if that approval is given, from what I understand, continue perhaps to operate in two different ways. He might continue to work for the bishop in the diocese in which he resides, but also play some role in the new Anglican Use Ordinariate. They also brought up another point, which was very positive. While some bishops are kind of wondering how this is all going to work, and of course, in the case of married priests, there's an additional concern, how that logistics, how that will happen and how they will be supported. But there's some real pluses that are obvious right up front. And for example, there are Episcopalian priests who are military chaplains. And those who are ready to join Anglican Use will actually, increase the ranks of Catholic military chaplains. And you may know we have a real diminished number of Catholic military chaplains, and we really need help. So that's going to be an immediate upside that the Church will have.
Well, Joan, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Register Radio today, and thank you for your fine work. For the Register, I want to remind listeners that if you would like to see Joan Frawley-Desmond's coverage, you can read it online at www.ncregister.com, or you can also read it in the print edition. We are always looking for subscribers. So thank you, Joan.
Thank you, Tim.
And indeed, thank you both. I would also like to point out that our own Raymond Arroyo did a very nice wrap-up on The World Over this week. I know that's going to encore a number of times over the weekend on EWTN radio and television, so hopefully you can check that out as well. When we return, Tim talks with the president of Belmont Abbey College, Dr. William Thierfelder, about something really big. Now, what is it? Well, you just got to wait and find out in about 60 seconds. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Are you concerned about the way our nation and our world are heading? Are you looking for the truth behind the issues of the day? Do you need support in standing up for life, the family, and our Catholic faith? Then join well-informed Catholics worldwide who depend on the National Catholic Register to address the most compelling questions of our time. Now part of the EWTN family of services, the Register is a trusted source of news and views with an unwavering fidelity to the Pope and the Magisterium. Get the in-depth analysis you need explaining what happened and why it matters for Catholics who engage in the culture to serve Christ. To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register, or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner, or call 800-854-6316.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
And welcome back. Along with Tim Drake, I'm Tom Price. Tim, for the past 3 years, Belmont Abbey College in Belmont, North Carolina, has been facing a tough fight over its decision to not provide contraception coverage for their employees at this very Catholic college. The president of Belmont Abbey College, Dr. William Thierfelder, has been a very vocal presence in the center of that fight. We're blessed to have him with us today here on Register Radio.
That's right, Tom. And as we just heard from Joan Frawley Desmond, one of the topics for the bishop's fall meeting was the issue of religious freedom. And this certainly falls into that category. Belmont Abbey College has been facing a fight with the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission over its decision not to provide contraception coverage for employees at the Catholic College. And most recently, with the help of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, Belmont Abbey College decided to launch a lawsuit against the federal government over its mandated health insurance coverage of contraception. And Dr. William Thierfelder is president of Belmont Abbey College, and thank you for being with us on Register Radio today, Dr. Thierfelder.
Well, Tim, thank you so much. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, pleasure to be with you. I think it was almost a year ago that I was down on campus and met you and saw the campus for the first time. I want to say, first of all, we did talk about this battle at that time, and Belmont Abbey is no stranger to this battle. Can you just tell us when and how it all first began?
Oh my gosh, it's been a saga. Believe it or not, this all began back in December of 2007. So we are almost going on 4 years with this EEOC battle that we've been involved with. But it's a very different issue than what we're involved with today in terms of filing this lawsuit against the federal government. But it certainly has been something, as you say, that and maybe that's what gave us the sensitivity to even file this lawsuit, is because we started to see to what degree the federal government is getting involved in our religious freedom and our right to conscience.
So currently, can you tell us, is Belmont Abbey being forced to provide contraceptive coverage for college employees?
Absolutely not, and we would never do it. Okay. As I've stated before, we would close the college before we would ever come near doing anything like that. So that's not even an option. And that's really been, you know, a lot of the battle has been somehow find the way, if they're trying to push us to see, well, can you offer this? I mean, there's just no compromise on this aspect of it. And so we're coming close to the end of mediation on this whole EEOC case, and I suspect that there's a chance that it can, you know, begin going through the federal court system at some point in the future. We'll see.
And of course, Belmont Abbey is closely connected there with the Benedictines there, and you have the full support of the Benedictine monks and the abbot in this stand as well. Correct.
That's correct. And I mean, to put it in perspective, just so people that haven't been to Belmont Abbey College would understand it, the basilica is actually connected to the monastery, which is connected to the main administration building of the campus. So when you say connected, it's we're intimately connected. In other words, the college is the apostolate of the Benedictine community that's there and has been for 135 years.
Yeah. It's interesting because when I was down there, I recalled that the abbot talked about some of the early persecution that the Catholics there faced, and I couldn't help but think about that as I was thinking about the current persecution that the college is facing.
It's interesting, and you know, this is how divine providence works. You know, God. Sometimes you can't figure out what is God's plan. How is he working this out? So I don't think. Again, I don't believe in accidents. And so the fact that little old Belmont Abbey College, which is down in the middle of the Bible Belt, just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, that we would be the ones initiating a lawsuit against the federal government and the Health and Human Service Department is really almost, you know, stranger than fiction. I mean, you could almost make these kind of stories up, but I think it does go back to our history in that, you know, from a Catholic perspective, we came there 135 years ago. Jesus Christ is the center of that college. That is why we exist. And I think we've lived out that life. And at the same time, being Benedictine, we welcome each guest in persona Christi as Christ. And so we're happy for anybody to come and join us. But at the same time, there needs to be a respect and understanding of who we are and the home that people have come to.
That's right. I want to remind listeners, you are listening to Register Radio. I am Tim Drake, and we are speaking with Dr. William Thierfelder, who is president of Belmont Abbey College, about their decision to launch a lawsuit against the federal government. Let's talk specifically about the lawsuit. As far as I know, you're the first Catholic college to launch a lawsuit against the federal government, and this is because of the mandate for contraceptive coverage in insurance. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a little bit more from a Catholic perspective, certainly. It's a little bit more than that. It's not only contraception, it's voluntary sterilization, and it's also very often when the contraceptive discussion comes up, those that may not share our non-use of contraception don't realize very often that some of those contraceptive medicines and so forth are actually abortifacients. So Ella and Plan B and so forth actually, from our perspective, can induce an abortion, which, again, would just be abominable. We just couldn't stand for that. So this is, you know, this is coming from the Affordable Care Act, which is sometimes referred to Obamacare. But this Affordable Care Act is in force. This is a finished document. It's unprecedented in law, this mandate, this federal law. But this is a final regulation, and for the purpose of what they call the Administrative Procedures Act, this takes place August 1st. There's no more discussion about this. This is happening, and so we just thought, rather than wait till it happens to us and then we have to sort of defend ourselves at that point, we figured we would just be proactive in this. And what we were also hoping for is that this is far bigger than Belmont Abbey College. So anybody's thinking this, well, this is just a Belmont Abbey College. This is about the United States of America. I mean, this is about anybody, you know, who's involved in any kind of religious organization, whether it be a hospital or a ministry or a college, a university, whatever it might be. And by the way, it's not just Catholic. This is going to affect anybody who has a faith that believes these things are not, you know, compatible with what we believe. And so this is big. This is huge. And I hope that maybe our small example will mobilize people to actually, you know, take some action, to begin to pull together and stand up, because I believe there's millions of us. I think there's tens of millions of people thinking like we're thinking, and we need to all pull together and actually do something about this and just not allow this to happen.
Yeah. Does Dr. Thierfelder, does the regulation as it exists, does it allow exemptions for religious institutions in any way, shape, or form?
Well, technically, yes, but the exemption in this mandate is so radical that only really people who exclusively serve and employ individuals of their own faith qualify for it. In a call to action by the Bishops' Council, you know, the USCCB, it stated that not even the ministry of Jesus and his early Christian church would qualify as religious because they did not confine their ministry or engage in a preaching ministry or only in a preaching ministry. And in fact, the exemption is directly at odds with the parable of the Good Samaritan, in which Jesus teaches concern and assistance for those in need regardless of their faith differences. And so certainly we have many people being in the South that are not Catholic that attend our school, and they've come to us because of what we believe. I mean, they say, we see that what you believe and what you stand for, and we appreciate that Jesus Christ is the center of that college. That's why we want to be part of it. But this mandate would say that we'd have to get rid of all those people. We'd have to turn everybody away that was not Catholic, which is really untenable. I mean, that's not what our missions as Catholics, that's not what we're called to do. So this exemption that they call it is, again, completely unreasonable, and it's also unprecedented how narrow it is.
Wow. I know some organizations, I remember hearing that McDonald's, for example, has been able to receive some type of waiver. Is something like that possible for Belmont Abbey?
It could be, but you bring up a great point, which is there have been, from my understanding, thousands of waivers, including businesses like McDonald's, teachers' unions, special interest groups, but it seems to somehow turn a blind eye to religious groups. And to your point, though, and here's I think this is a really important point. I spoke to the Cardinal Newman presidents over the past weekend. We were down in Baltimore where the bishops were also meeting. And I spoke to those other presidents, and I said, you know, this is not a situation where each of us should be looking for some individual waiver. This is big. This is about religious freedom and the right to conscience. I mean, that is huge. So the detail right now is this particular mandate. But this applies in a much broader sense, and I think we got to wake up, especially as Catholics, we got to stand up and just say, hey, we are not doing this, and we're not going to allow this to happen. And you know what? The block of us, because, you know, in the United States of America, you have, what, 60 million Catholics. If at least, you know, half of them stood up and did something, we would change this entire thing, and I think that's what we need to do, and we need to understand this is not just about can we get a waiver. Yes, I think Belmont Abbey College, what if they came back and said, you know what, this little college is a pain in our neck, we'll give them the waiver, just like we gave McDonald's the waiver, but what does that do for all the other Catholic hospitals, ministries, colleges, universities in the country? Nothing.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Thierfelder, I want to thank you for being on Register Radio. I also want to give a shout-out to Belmont Abbey. I was extremely impressed with what's going on at that college, and I think Catholic parents who are looking for a solid place should check it out. So thank you for your time.
Well, thanks, Tim, so much, and really I appreciate your good work. You don't realize sometimes how important it is what you're doing, because this is how we all have been isolated over time. You doing this kind of program pulls us all together. We get to hear things, and now we got to act on them.
And I will add my thanks as well, Dr. Thierfelder. I want to mention your excellent website, belmontabbeycollege.edu. It is a beautiful website, and I think it really tells the Belmont Abbey story very well.
Well, God bless you both.
Thank you so much. And Tim, I want to thank you for today's program, and I want to wish you and your family and all of our listeners a very blessed Thanksgiving.
Likewise, Tom. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving with your family and friends.
Thank you, my friend. Next week on Register Radio, Tim talks with mechanical engineer and Catholic writer Brandon Vaught about his recent book, The Church and New Media. And in our second segment, Dan Burke will be here. He'll be interviewing Kansas City Archbishop Joseph Naumann about the necessity of spiritual direction for Catholic laity. Very, very important. Thank you all for joining us today on Register Radio. For all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is made possible by donations from generous listeners like you. To bless us with your gift, visit ncregister.com and click on the Donate tab or call 205-568-9756.